call the meeting to order at 6:02. We'll begin with a board member roll call. This is Paul Ashton, chair, present.
Kurt Vondren.
Bobby Strang.
Morgan Kane.
Great. All current board members are present. We'll open up for a public comment period. I don't see anybody from the public for such a period, so we will move on to reviewing the minutes from the last meeting. We can take a few moments to see if there are any issues or changes related to those meetings minutes.
I would move reception of the minutes as presented.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
The minutes are approved. And now we move on to old business.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first and only item on old business is the presidential inauguration monitoring report. I just wanted to give you an update on that. The police department has forwarded, as far as we know, has forwarded everything that all of the documents that we need to proceed with the review, and they forwarded that to the Police Foundation. We are now in the process of having the Police Foundation investigators get access to evidence.com, that's the police body cameras, so that they will be able to begin reviewing the body camera footage from Inauguration Day. And then we're in the process of looking at how or when or whether to conduct interviews of police department members and community members. So I'd say from the investigation phase of the report, I'd say we're about 40% of the way there as far as where we're at with it right now. And there's no draft report yet or anything. We're still in the investigation stages with the Police Foundation, and we have regular contact with them about once a week for updates and communicate with the next steps that we're taking. Any questions on that? All right. That's old business. I'll now go to the agency report. And I wanted to make a very important note again. I think I noted at the last meeting, but it's now official as of December 12th that Commander Kane is with us until January 12th, 2021, absent Yay. Any extreme circumstances. So congratulations on your reappointment.
Thank you.
It's lifetime.
They say 25 lives.
As I was reading his bio in the report, it made me think of that you can't escape it.
Yeah. All right.
To get rid of the gavel, though.
All right. The other item I wanted to call to your attention is the number of complaints, and we'll get to that in more detail with Mona in a minute, but it is a critical issue is the volume of complaints that we're receiving and that we are continuing to receive, and the fact that there has been a very little decrease in the volume of complaints over the past year, and we're still experiencing that. And even over the holiday season and the colder weather season, we're not really experiencing a seasonal decrease as we might have expected to see at this time of year. So I will talk about that in more detail in a minute. We don't have a lot of outreach activities. This was kind of a short period from between our last meeting and today, so there's not a lot of events to report or activities to report. So I want to just mention as part of the report that tomorrow we will be monitoring the March for Life. March that's starting tomorrow, and I thought you might be interested in seeing what we do. There's another one for you. What we do in preparation for the march. Tomorrow we're going to have two teams out of four people total, plus a couple rotating people probably that will be monitoring the march. I know Bobby's participated in our monitoring activities, so you're pretty familiar with what we do, but here's a sample of our briefing memo for tomorrow's march, just to give you an idea of what we've planned for it and what we put together for it. As of about an hour ago, and Commander Kane probably knows more about it than I do, but I was informed by the SOD commander about an hour ago that they're expecting about 50,000 people tomorrow. So we're going to have some people at the Capital One Arena, where part of the march is going to start, and they're going to follow that section of the march down to the mall on 12th Street. And we're going to have another team of monitors at 12th Street at the rally point. And then both teams will follow the march to the Supreme Court and stand by at the Supreme Court for a while to see how that develops. And then while they're doing that, they make observations about what they're doing. They all have iPads. They can make recordings. They have the ability to receive complaints. They have business cards. They have identifiable clothing now that we've purchased, so people know who they are. And they interact with the crowd too, talk about what we do, who we are, things like that. And we're not expecting anything to happen tomorrow, but if something does, we'll have members there to make any observations, and then we'll put out a report. If nothing happens that's reportable, then we won't even be doing a formal report. Alicia, did I miss anything in that?
Nope.
Alicia helps a lot on that. Well, she's the one that wound up writing the report, if there is one. So.
I will say, I mean, we did monitor the March for Life last year as well, and it was uneventful. As you all know, we did not issue a report on that, so we fully expect that to be the same, but we're always prepared just in case.
All right. Did I get everything okay, Commander?
Mm-hmm. You did. You hit all the high marks.
All right, since it's your part of your district.
Particularly that we had
an
uneventful event last year.
Yep.
So we're hoping
for the next thing on the board report, I guess, is we can jump to the statistics. And I'll talk about the next item after that, okay? So let's go to the statistics now and talk about the complaints. So if you wouldn't mind, Mona, go ahead.
So as Mike mentioned, we are still experiencing an increase in our complaints from last fiscal year. The percentage of increase is slowing, so that's good, I think, but it is still increasing. So we were curious if around this time last year that we really started to see the increase kind of go beyond just, you know, 20% or 30%. So that's when we really started to see more steeper increase. And so we were curious that as compared to last year, if then the increase would slow, and it has. But it is still increasing, so that is still a concern for us. Also, Paul, you asked last meeting about the percentage of, or the impact of, the box fours, the failure to cooperate, and the percentage of that, but said you didn't want it a separate line, but I did do the calculation. So this year compared to last year, so this year there were so far 115 dismissal closures. 40% of those, 46 or 40% of those were for failure to cooperate with investigations. As compared to last year, it was 14 of the 70, so only 20% were failure to cooperative investigations, and I think you all get those, and you all see the increase and noted that, so it has increased in those numbers. But overall, our dismissals, we have more this year than last year, largely because our increase in cases, yeah, and our volume has increased. So that's I think the information that you asked for. So we have, you know, seen that. And then also we are keeping track per request of the referrals from NPD. So that you can see this was around the time that we started to include, just at the new year last year, that we really started to have in the process of them sending us complaints directly. So it was about December of last year. So you can really see that this is when it really is going to pick up. And so we'll see over the next few meetings, we'll see if that, you know, comparatively when we were receiving complaints directly, when the NEAR Act really took effect and we started receiving complaints from NPD directly, we'll see with that comparison if it levels off, which I assume it will. I think it was December of last year that we really started getting the complaints directly for the NEAR Act. So.
Yeah, December 16th.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, so this only has about a month of that, last year's, and then this year, you know, so we'll see what those numbers. We'll have a better comparison, I think.
I did want to mention, too, in the email that was sent, it had the wrong dismissal schedule. The one that you have in front of you right now is the right one?
No, it's not.
Is this the wrong one, too?
Yeah.
Oh, it is, isn't it? It's the one that was in the email.
I can email you guys the...
How did that happen again?
I don't know.
All right, we're going to have to send you a new...
Yeah. One. It just includes through May, so it'll have the entire...
This is the one from last time.
Mm-hmm.
So, are the dates still right?
Yeah, these dates, the last 4 dates through March 9th, those are still right.
Okay.
But we just added the next... 8 weeks. Yeah, we just added the next 8 weeks on the next one. So I can just email that to everyone so that they have the full from this week until I think it's May.
So this was my first week.
Mm-hmm.
This week?
Yeah.
So
you'll get them on Monday.
Oh, I thought the first week you got them. I don't get the first batch till the week after. Okay.
So everything that was reviewed and signed this week, then you get...
Oh, then everything reviewed and signed
yes.
next week.
Yeah.
I get next week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We'll get it straight.
Yeah, I'll
I understand.
We'll email. We'll email tomorrow. We'll email the updated.
I just kind of normally wait until I get the email.
How
do you
want
to receive these?
Right.
So, yeah.
Any questions for Mona on those?
I have a question on... this is more of a general question. Not specifically on these numbers, but has OPC ever done a customer service satisfaction survey of some kind?
We've done them for the mediations, but not for the... maybe you know the history better than I do.
As I'm looking at this, because, you know, and I don't know if there's any practical way to find out this information, but when I look at things like 40% failure to cooperate and all these other issues, I'm just wondering if it would be insightful at all to know why people don't cooperate.
Hmm.
We talked, I think when Phil was still here, we talked about doing that at one point, and we thought that would be helpful to know why people don't cooperate or follow through, and also if it's dismissed, do they still feel like, well, this was looked into, so I feel better, or if they just feel like those SOBs, you know, aren't doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we kicked it around for a while, and it was just... you have to do that according to the science of the field. You just can't kind of, a bunch of amateurs make it up, and I think that turned out to be our roadblock.
Something like that, you know, if it would be helpful, I think might only be feasible if it could be contracted to someone that does that all the time.
Right. It would take a profession. I think it would be very helpful, the information.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how do you... in a valid way, acquire it.
And I don't know that people, based on, I don't know that we would be able to really get very much data for, especially for the non-cooperations, because they're not cooperating. I mean, to be honest, like, we don't, most of these, a lot of them, we don't even, and you guys see this, we don't even ever hear back from them.
Yeah.
Well,
and
that,
so that,
that
would be.
Kind of, that was my first point, but when you said to contract it out, and it's a different entity, reaching out for the failure to cooperate, maybe you might get a reaction from that.
Well, my thought on it, if it was feasible in terms of cost and prep and implementation, someone that does that kind of work all the time would have more tools in terms of knowledge, skills, and methods to figure out how to get through that wall of no contact to find out why are people just not following through.
So we do have that information for the mediations because Chris talks to the complainants before we refer to mediation. So usually they'll either just, like Mona said, either just not ever get back to us, but some of them, a good portion of them say they just aren't interested in mediation anymore. You know, they will relay that to us, and then we pass that back to the investigators. The other part of it, too, is in the mediation surveys, whether it's resolved or unresolved, we have surveys, so it doesn't matter the outcome. We ask them if it's a fair forum. We ask them if their attitude had changed towards the other party, even if it wasn't resolved. And so if it happens, we have that data. But then we also do have that touch point, and Chris gets the feedback about why they don't want to continue, and we have that information in the file as well. Some of them just change their mind.
From reviewing the feedback that you get, though, just from the forums, kind of what is the, if you had to generalize on what the consensus was, are folks walking away from those mediations feeling?
Yes. Well, for the last 2 years and to date through FY17, we have 100% satisfaction for officers and 90% from officers. That's a fair forum to resolve the issues that the complainant complained about, not the issues that they discussed, but the issues that the complainant complained about. And about 90% satisfaction with the mediation session and the mediators from the complainants regarding the session. Whether it was resolved or unresolved, those are the numbers, because we don't track the resolution rate and match it to the data. For the ones that Chris talks to when he tries to schedule it and let them know or assign it to a mediator, most of the ones that say that they don't want to participate in mediation after they told the investigator they did, which is why it was referred, they just aren't interested anymore. It's, you know, a month or so after they complain, they don't want it to take up much more time. We used to think that it maybe was a hindrance because we did them during the day, but we have them evenings and weekends now. I think people just change their mind. They realize that they can't just file a complaint and wait for a resolution, you know, from the investigation. That's just generalized based on the feedback. But we do have the data and the report, mid-year reports for the surveys. Okay. So the satisfaction about the forum, the mediator, and the session seem to be pretty much stable, but they're happy with it.
That's helpful.
When it does go to the table. But the ones that never call back or talk to us ever again, we don't know anything.
I don't know if it would be useful knowledge or not. Especially with a substantial increase in the number of dismissals and the percentage, you know, if I'm just looking at that number alone, the question that comes to my mind is there a consistent reason for this? Are people not satisfied with the process? Or are they rethinking because we've made it so easy to complain that some people who are just mad complain, then think better of it?
Change their mind.
Then they cool down.
I think part of it too is...
Do they not have faith in the process?
I think part of it, and I don't know, Mona, let me know if I go astray, but they come in, they have to do a formal statement. It actually, you can't just fill out a form and go away. You know, and then there's constant contact over the evolution of the investigation. They kind of just lose interest in participating.
I mean, I have found in reading the dismissals for the people who have dropped off, I mean, clearly some of them were blowing off steam and calmed down and have lost interest in pursuing it.
More minor stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Others, it's more difficult to discern exactly why it is. Some, which I do worry, and I do read these things very thoroughly, I think we have to be sensitive to this, is that they are people with complicated lives. They're not, you know, here's my home, my phone, my landline, where I've lived in this house for 20 years and I will be there. Mm-hmm. They're couch surfing, their phones are disconnected, they are, you know, low-income people, and those I do worry about. You know, that is a problem. But what I've been more concerned about is the people who do follow through and the cases are dismissed, what their attitude is, whether it is, got my day in court, all right, this was brought up with this officer, I feel good, or whether it's bad. I mean, given that we don't really have an obvious methodology, I wonder if the best thing to do is, either at the next meeting or in contacts before that. Just ask through NACO what other offices, if they've ever done anything, if they've ever, maybe there's a simpler way that we're not thinking of. Maybe there is a expert out there who does this.
I'm familiar with the agencies that do it. I mean, companies that you can contract mm-hmm. with that will do a survey.
But they're not cheap.
None of them are cheap.
Yeah.
And so it has been done in other places, but...
Maybe just ask around, I think, is the best.
I mean, I'll give you an example of... in Baldwin, my previous employer was... when we did a survey of the police department, and it was only a sample of, I think, about 2,000 people, that survey cost over $50,000.
Yeah.
But it was a supposedly scientifically accurate assembled survey, and they did spend a lot of time putting it together, and it was very professionally done. But that's, if you're going to do something like that, it's mm-hmm. got to be done right, mm-hmm. as you were saying. But in order to have it done right, it costs money. That's always the issue with any agency. And in fact, you know, part of the NEAR Act and part of our recommendation at the budget hearings a year and a half ago was that part of my suggestion was that we do one of those surveys for MPD, community satisfaction survey on MPD. And that was actually part of the NEAR Act, that a survey would be conducted, but it was not funded. Because once you look at it, you see even for an even larger department, the costs keep going up. And you know, it could easily be $150,000, $200,000 to do a survey of MPD community satisfaction.
So. You know, what might be helpful and cheap is that, I mean, obviously there's always differences. If a somewhat similar agency has done it, and to look at their results, mm-hmm. in that, I mean, obviously every community is different, but some things may be consistent, and some things we may be able to assume are consistent. And I think that would just be helpful data. And if it's already been done and paid for, and if another office would share it, obviously that'd be an office that has somewhat of a similar structure and setup that we do, if that exists. So it doesn't cost anything to ask around.
Sure. No, it doesn't. No, that's true. Okay. Thanks. As long as we're talking about the statistics, then with. Mona, I think it would be a good time to go to the next item and have Rochelle talk about a question that you had asked about last time at our last meeting, which is with respect to what happens to dismissals versus non-dismissals.
I think it was and Kurt's question.
The source, was it Kurt's question?
Yeah.
For the minutes.
One of them. Who knows? Okay, whoever had the question, we'll answer it now.
Yeah, it was discussed about the increase and where we're seeing the sources of those and what's happening with the non-dismissals, if there's kind of trends. And so Matt had originally started looking at that. We kind of put some of the current data together for you to see how FY17 turned out with the agency having the most cases of its inception since its inception. So we determined that non-dismissals were mediations, policy referrals, and rapid resolutions. So we have those alternative options now, so we call those non-dismissals, including the mediation. So 46% of those alternative dispositions come from the e-form now. So it's kind of a really interesting trend. But then, of course, a large number of the e-form, the other part of it that's not adjudicated, are administratively. So the three categories are non-dismissals, which are the alternative dispositions, adjudications, and administrative closures. So of the 14 adjudications, we have that number down there. But so the other big chunk of the non-dismissals were administratively closed. But those had positive dispositions more often than not. And so we're seeing good trends come out of the e-forms, even though it was the most percentage that came in. But MPD referrals resulted in non-dismissals at a similar rate as those that come in any other form. And then MPD referrals actually are resulting in fewer administrative closures. So just some interesting trends. We don't know what it means yet. That's kind of the demographics of the data based on sources. And then of the adjudicated cases, two came from, we had 14 last year that were reports of investigation that went to complaint examiner. Two of them were e-forms, two were MPD referrals,
and the other six were either walk-in, fax, and one email. So that's the, just the raw data on those. It's kind of interesting, but last year was an anomaly in and of itself, so those are just the facts. What it means, what it's going to be this year, we have no idea, but those are the facts of the trends on the majority numbers from last year.
Positive dispositions.
Meaning not dismissed. So adjudicated mediation for policy training. And then the second page, the follow-up question to that original question about sources and dispositions from last year, what the increase was, how was the increase of the 90-day extension window affected by the increase? So between FY14 and 16, there were an average of 30 complaints per fiscal year, and now there's an average of, in FY17, we received 54 complaints, so not too much of an increase. So that's not really showing a big impact.
And we still have the ability to waive the 90 days. Mm-hmm. And I have done that on occasion. I mean, we'll look at a couple things when we look at going over the 90 days. We'll look at how long over the 90 days. Is it 3 years or is it 3 days? Are they late? Another thing we'll look at is complaint, the legitimacy, the perceived legitimacy of the complaint on his face. Does it look like a complaint that's going to go somewhere or not, that we should put some time and resources into it? Because right now we make daily decisions based on resource allocation because we're operating at full capacity. So even in the situation we're in with the number of complaints we're bringing in, if we still waive complaints. I waived one, I think it was last week, the 90-day time limit. So I still look at all of them. They all come to me individually if anything's over 90 days for a determination whether we can waive it or not or whether we're going to refer it back to MPD. So, and even if we waive it, that doesn't mean nothing happens. That means it gets sent to MPD because they don't have the 90 days. So.
I have a question that may or may not be all that important, and I'm sure you've thought of it, but it just popped in my head because it's happening in my office. When you say you're operating at capacity, considering that this year's flu season is rather virulent, do you have contingencies? Should it tear through this office to be able to keep up?
We're going to ask all board members to
come in. Flu shots.
You're looking at the back of it.
I'm sure they have computers.
That work. Sure, that's okay. What everyone wants to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, so far we're okay on that.
But that being said, right, flu aside, since we are operating at 100% capacity, right, and when I joined this board, the board worked very diligently along with you to get out of a decades-long backlog, essentially. Mm-hmm. So I want to, you know, I'm very cognizant of the fact that we're at 100% capacity. While the volume may be, like, edging off, it's still increasing. Like, what, you know, what is the long, I guess, the contingency plan, I would say?
Sure. Well, I met with the budget office on Friday last week, and they are well aware of our situation. Mm-hmm. Every department had a regular meeting scheduled, and this was part of our regular meeting, and this is one of the things we discuss is that we have to continue watching our trends, and it may come to be that I will have to go back to the mayor's office and through the budgeting process this year, which we're in the middle of right now, and ask for an enhancement or additional FTEs, but as I told them on Friday, I'm not ready to do that yet because we are able to handle what we have right now, mm-hmm. And we're able to continue doing that. And I don't believe in just adding positions just in the event that we might need them. I believe in being very fiscally responsible on those kind of things. So they know that request could come, and I believe that they would be receptive to it, as would the council. If we need be. And that's the same thing I told them last year when the trend started, and they are very receptive to that too. So we're going to continue monitoring it and see where it goes, and if it does become a critical point where we have to do something, then we're prepared to do that at that point.
Do you, in that vein, then, do you cross-train the staff? Are you all cross-trained to do each other? Like, if something were to happen, if the flu did take over, could someone step in and do what you do or do what you do?
Yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, the investigators, primarily we're concerned about the investigators.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we don't have...
Say that again?
Primarily we're concerned about the investigators and their workload. So there are not non-investigators that could do the investigator job. We don't have any additional personnel to do that. So there's no cross-training that from that perspective. But for the supervisors there, I'm satisfied that the three main supervisors we have, the chief investigator and two investigative managers, are sufficiently cross-trained that they, okay. In fact, they do that on a rotating basis all the time when one or two of them are gone. So that we're okay on that too.
Two of them have been former investigators.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Well, and that's
former investigators.
Well, and that's the thing too, is that we can always help out with investigations. I mean, we have this skill set to do that.
You know, some organizations, one person walks out the door, mm-mm. and there's all the knowledge right there.
Yeah,
no.
Mm-hmm. And there's been changes enough that, like, some of us know how to do other things, too, just because we used to do that before someone else came or before there's been reorganization of tasks and stuff like that, so... Don't be talking about big flu outbreaks.
The city got us all flu shots.
Yeah, we've been...
And we have interns starting again.
Yeah, there we go. Investigative interns.
We take full advantage of our interns.
And they would love the opportunity, I'm sure, to step in and just take over the case.
You're at capacity. What's going through my office? So it's on my mind.
Okay.
For the rest of the year.
See, I hear at capacity. I hear kind of overworked. I'm going to look for another job, you know, on those things.
Well, two of the investigators used to be, or two of the managers used to be investigators, so when we had that backlog, they know the average caseload used to be like 40 or 50. Mm-hmm. The average caseload now is 10.
Nice.
So that's at capacity in 2018.
Oh, wow.
Just in case anyone's wondering.
I mean, I'll say this with our investigators present here, so, I mean, I've said this to them too, but before, I mean, full capacity does not mean necessarily that they're overworked. I mean, they have room to absorb a little bit more if they have to, but I think and they're willing to do that, even though they're not shaking their heads too much right now. But
they're not even smiling.
The other thing that Mr. Toby, you always say helps out is BWC.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess one of you talked about it too. You know, BWC helps shrink.
It can help and hurt. Yeah.
The time
they're so time-consuming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Depends on the case.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's more work. Mm-hmm. Right.
So we do manage the average caseload. To manage the capacity, and like I said, two of the investigation managers know what it used to be. Mm-hmm. When we had
years we can always step in and help out if we need to.
Yep,
we and have. We've done that.
Yeah. And the biggest asset we have are like the four people at that end of the table, especially the three people at that end of the table. We got a great staff that's working hard to get this stuff done, so without sacrificing thoroughness and completeness. So.
As long as they don't get sick.
No one gets
sick. For a long period of time.
The one advantage you have over employee productivity is I'm sure you have no sympathy for the liberal snow leaf policies that we sometimes see in this city. Put on your galoshes and get to work, right?
Dave, you've probably heard that actually in the staff meeting.
Well, I've been here for two different big, huge snowstorms where we got like 3 feet. So, and one of them I remember being the only one here. And it, you know, because I remember those days. So, I hear you.
I remember the days when the government closed and the threat of snow and it actually didn't snow.
Oh, yeah.
That was Mayor Gray.
Yeah, I know.
We had a couple of those.
He's not with us anymore. I'm from upstate New York, so I don't want to go to school because of snow.
Exactly.
When I got down here and the city shut down, I was like,
what the hell?
Yeah.
I prayed for it because it's so easy, but it's not happening anymore. We live there.
Well, let's just hope for more snow then, I guess. All right. Let's continue on. And just to close the conversation on this report of dismissals and non-dismissals, this is a very good example of what we can do with a research analyst now. Because we didn't have this before. This is really an excellent report, so thank you Rochelle, and thanks Matt, who's not Matt here, who's sick.
And he's just not able to hear. <Yeah. laughs>
All right. Now I want to open it up to, before I go to the use of force report, I want to open it up to Alicia. She wants to discuss another policy report that's not on the agenda, but we got it ready to the point that we want to get it to you today so you can start looking at it, and maybe you can give us, go ahead.
Yeah. So this is actually, it's not a new policy report on a new issue. It's reviewing all of the policy reports and recommendations that were issued in fiscal years 15 and 16 and going back through them to see what MPD or DCHAPD have done in response to those. We reached out to MPD and DCHPD, so the responses about what they've done are their words. It was not based on us reviewing things. Sometimes we inserted notes where we had other information, but the exact response is from the departments themselves, comparing it to what the recommendation was, and then we've gone through and done an analysis basically of whether that recommendation has now been fully completed, whether there's still work that could be done, or whether it's sort of been ignored. So the point of this policy, of this update basically on these policy recommendations, is just to make sure that we are keeping tabs on where our policy recommendations are going, not just throwing them out there and then walking away and forgetting about them. This has been done in the past. It just hadn't been done since the FY14 recommendation, so this is filling in the gap. It started with a request from council, but we have decided that it would be good to make it public and put this information out there. So I have copies of it for you all to review. It's not very dense, and we're not going to ask you to review it right now, so I didn't mean to scare anyone with that. But the idea would be for you all to take it. I can also email it to you tomorrow as well. But we were hoping you might consider, if it's all right with you all, looking it over the next week, and then we would put it to an electronic vote for you all to vote on via email, with the idea of releasing it if it was approved on Monday the 29th, so the week following, not this coming Monday, but the following. So.
Yeah, it's about, you'll see it's about 10 pages. It basically lists all the recommendations that were made over those two fiscal years, mm-hmm. and then Alicia put a lot of time and effort into working with MPD and making determinations whether they implemented those recommendations or not. Some of them, to some extent, involve some subjective decision-making, and some of them were very straightforward, but it's not a regular policy recommendation. It's just a report on our reports.
Right.
And that's why I'm hoping that it could be a faster turnaround and we would be able to issue it to the council and then and to the public.
So electronic vote when?
Hopefully by next Thursday, so that way if there were any changes we needed to make, then we could do them on Friday. So that would give you about a week to review. If that's not okay, that we can change that timeline. That was just what we were thinking.
We can just do it till Monday.
Till the 29th?
29th. I'm out of the country. Oh. I don't know if I can.
That's up to the chair, but.
I can read it, but I'm not sure I can respond.
Sure. No, that's why we're asking.
Yeah.
We can move it to the 29th.
Okay. I'll be in a country that controls its
internet.
Electronic access. Understandable.
No, I appreciate it if you have a particular look at it, and we'll, whenever you come back to it, we'll take we'll look at it up. If you have any comments about it, that would be great.
And I'll send an email with the electronic attachment just in case anybody does want that instead, and I will also lay out deadlines for getting back to us and send out reminders to keep everyone on schedule.
And it does not include this past year. It's just the two previous fiscal years, 15 and 16.
Right, and that was intentional. The idea was reviewing this past fiscal year hadn't really given the departments enough time to implement anything, particularly because our last policy recommendation for FY17 was in September, so there hasn't really been adequate time to fully implement anything. So the idea is to always give at least a full year after they've been done before we go back to review.
Yeah. And the plan moving forward is to do this on a regular basis, then, on an annual basis, and see how that works out. So it's good information. think at one time it was kept or somebody was tracking it, but it kind of fell by the wayside, and now we're going to reinstate it. Good. All right. Thanks, Alicia. Now I'd like to move on to item 7B. We're on the use of force report. This was transmitted to everyone a couple of weeks ago, one of the draft. We have a final version that we've made some adjustments to based on what the police department's response to the draft was. And what I'd like to do, rather than go through the entire report, is I'd like to first highlight some of the changes we made based on the police department's response to the report. There aren't that many, but a few. When we first sent the report, the draft, to the department, and Rochelle, I'll turn it over to you in a minute, too, because you were intimately involved in it. I just want to give the overview.
Sure.
When we first sent the report to the department, we were short about 380 reports, the PDF format reports, use of force reports. And that was in the report that the draft that you got was that we haven't received all of these reports. And this was after many months of going back and forth and them eventually telling us we don't have those reports, we can't find them. So we finally went ahead and wrote our report up. Well, when the draft came out, the department somehow came up with about 280 additional reports after we sent them this draft and after they realized that this was going, you know, that we were going to go ahead with a report. So they were able to locate additional reports. So we made a note of that in the new report that they've located these additional reports where, and Michelle will talk about the numbers in a second about that. So that was one of the more significant changes that we've made to the draft and from what you've seen. The other one was, Alicia, you were involved in one of the other changes, right? Was that a change in the recommendation?
There were, to the recommendations. The letter from the chief had raised a concern about an agreement between MPD and the U.S. Attorney's Office regarding the RIF, which we recommend getting rid of. And in our initial report, we had seen no evidence of that agreement, but we were able to locate a report that did make reference to an agreement by the U.S. Attorney's Office to the RIF. So the recommendation changed slightly in that we note that we took out the reference to no agreement with the U.S. Attorney's Office, but it did not change the ultimate recommendation that the RIF should be removed and there should be one use of force report form, the UFER.
Okay.
So that's recommendation 2.
Right. And then the third and last thing I wanted to mention before I turn over to Rochelle for a minute, as far as the police department's response was they... We had made a recommendation in the report that the department reinstitute this a form called, they call it here a unseen sheet or something like that. It's a sheet that a detective at an officer-involved shooting would fill out that it involves things like taking measurements of where the officer was when he discharged his firearm to where the suspect was or was not struck, whether the person was struck, different angles of trajectory, different types of drilling down on the information at the scene that's important to evaluate the use of force in shooting cases. And we asked for those reports from the department over the course of a few months of assembling this report, and they said they don't do it anymore. So we put out our draft report, one you got, and the department's response was, in formal response to the draft report was, well, we do those. So we don't know if they do them or don't do them. I'm not sure. Maybe they do them sometimes. Maybe they don't. But I've asked the department, if you do have this information and those reports, to forward them to us immediately. And then we will assemble that in our next annual report when we make some adjustments.
It seems to me that some of that information is what is captured when DFS comes out and processes the scenes.
Right.
Did we get any of that information from them?
No. So I don't know if there's a mix-up in that part of it, but we certainly made our requests, I thought, were pretty clear that we wanted all of the information from officer-involved shootings, and that was one of our recommendations that continues. So we'll have to see what the end result is of that. I don't know if where it is at, but that remained one of our recommendations, was that if this is indeed still being kept, we need to get it. And we need to incorporate it in our next report because it'll be very helpful to show the accuracy of the firearm discharges or the inaccuracy, the distances. And it really helps. What I found in my previous life was it really helps the department in their training, because if we can show 10 officer involved shootings that were less than 15 feet away, and 60% of the time the officer missed, you know, I'm just throwing those numbers out, that's really helpful for the department to do their scenario training, because now they can concentrate on shootings practicing 15 feet away or less, and practicing on accuracy, for example.
But so we do, we have where even an official from the training academy comes out to the scenes to evaluate and to go back and see, do we need to curtail scenarios, training scenarios based on to what is actually occurring on the street.
Right.
Which it sounds like that's
exactly what
I'd
like
so
to do.
So that is something that
right.
we do.
What we're not being told is, where's that data?
Because we could help them with it.
Right.
We could help them tell them, you know, all the shootings last year, you had, you know, this was the distance, this was the time period involved,
yeah,
this was
just
the scenario.
That is going to be captured by DFS when they process the scene. So it sounds to me like you said something where you wanted that directly done on the scene by a detective or by internal
Well, somebody
affairs.
Has to do it, and they need to get it to us. I don't know who does it or not.
I mean, I just know that the information exists, so
right.
I don't know if there was a... Because it sounded to me as if, and when I read it, that the detective on the scene would be doing that, and that's kind of a function that falls.
That seems what the general
else.
Order says. You know, when the 15s are in place, they come and collect this information. And it's not that we're being told that the 15s aren't, you know, because the 15s don't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We're being told the data does not exist. MPD is not collecting that data. People may be on the scene viewing that data, but is it being collected and reported? That's what. We're being told is not happening, or if it is happening, MPD does not have
so
it.
So we
anywhere.
Didn't have the discussion that that's part of the forensics report that
in the
is
two
complete.
Different point of contacts that we have, that was never stated. MPD is not collecting this information.
Okay.
So when we worked from April until December.
You said the two different.
Yeah, when we got points of contacts that.
Yeah, I'm thinking now that we're talking about it, maybe the disconnect is in communication, and that,
I think
well, MPD
like
didn't have it, but maybe
right.
somebody else had it.
That's
right.
kind of, and that's why I'm going to ask
yeah.
who are the two points of contact.
Well, through internal affairs, it's Lieutenant Pierce. She was
Deborah Pierce. Uh-huh.
She was working with us, and I don't remember the other individual right now. That was
varied.
Our main contact.
I mean, it varied depending on who was on the data.
I mean, because there was a
well,
time when we processed all of the scenes.
Yeah.
But now that we have DFS, we're not processing all of the scenes.
And that might be what they're interpreting to us.
I think
right.
this could equate to
sure.
some sort of communication issue.
Yeah.
Where there's not a clear understanding.
Or the data is being collected and PD just doesn't have hands on it. I mean, because if DFS is collecting it, maybe they're housing that data.
They might be housing it, but it's something that at some point we have to have access to in the investigation.
Exactly.
So would it be something that would originate out of it? Probably
sure.
not.
Yeah.
So are we missing something there in the communication that the information is available and it's available because DFS collects it when they come in and process it?
Well, I think this recommendation will get us to that. That's what we're saying. It's like MPD is saying they don't have this information. We say for all these reasons it's vital. Once people, like you're doing, evaluate that recommendation,
And I have never seen it as part of any of the use of force review report cases that we've reviewed. You know, when we get an entire packet, and I've never seen that type of report in any of those reviews that we've done. So
but just let me ask this question. So was it relayed to you that we actually have academy personnel that responds out specifically to evaluate the on-scene of a shooting, a police-involved shooting, to go back and critique it and to see how we need to adjust training or if we need to adjust training or was that related at all to
no,
you?
No, not in the
that is something
response.
We do.
Right. I presume it happened. But.
It does. They come out of their bed
so
no matter what time it is.
This is the answer we got. Internal Affairs continues to do on-scene scenes. So when we asked for those, we were told they don't have them. When we were asking for...
Yeah, I read that, and I was like, that can't be.
Right.
So
April
it, so.
Through December 7th, you know, Matt working with Lieutenant Pierce and the people that she delegated to do all these data, we asked for specifically on-scene sheets based on the general order, and they said we don't have them.
Okay.
And then this was the response. And so we asked... So we got this response on...
So is it the information, or are you looking specifically for an on-scene sheet?
The information in the on-scene sheet.
Right. Okay.
Which is what
I'm
we
gonna
said.
Follow up on that
yeah, which is what
yeah.
we said in the recommendations. for all these reasons, these specific pieces of that information would be helpful for X, Y, and Z. So, and then after, when they said they had them on December 22nd, we asked, well, if you can give them to us, we still have time to include them in the report. We still want them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm sure it is communication.
That information, yeah, that information
sounds
exists.
Like it's somewhere.
It exists.
Yeah. But through the next year, you know, once we start figuring out where that is, Matt can work with Lieutenant Pearson and other people as he has over the last year to accumulate that data and get it in a better state. But, you know, that's how this works. The recommendations help us see what we have, don't have, and can clean up. And then through that collaborative process, you know, we can start looking at those over the next year or whatever that data is and figure out how to make it more clean in the reporting process. So that would be a good next step to work through.
All right.
I should have mentioned this earlier. I have at 7 o'clock, I have to leave. I have another commitment.
Okay.
So
all right.
Well, I was just going to perform without me, so it doesn't.
No, we got
to
vote. Okay.
We might get to it. I was just going to ask Michelle to go ahead and mention any other items about the force.
The only other thing is, but it's in here, but just to point it out to you, to know that it's a change, is our recommendation 3, when we sent the draft report to MPD on December 7th, we recommended that they use PPMS to do the electronic, to have all the use of force data recorded electronically. And so on January 2nd, 2018, they actually put out an executive order with a process for officers to submit the use of force form into PPMS so that it is electronically captured. Now, we still don't know if anyone's done it yet or how it's working, but we still want. So we added that updated information on pages 6 and 7 and then the recommendation on page 33. But what we don't know is if it still has the rest of the recommendation information at pieces of content to make sure it's cohesive.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the rest of it you captured.
Okay.
The data, one other important thing, the data between, so we were missing the 383, and then we got 255 of those 383. The data did not change. Our analysis outcomes and outputs and comparative analysis did not change. It was more of what we had already seen. So it seems like a huge chunk, but it didn't change the analysis or the outcomes.
And speaking of the changing the data or reviewing the data, what I'm leaning towards for next year, and I'm open to comments from you two. One is, this is a fiscal year report, and what I'd like to do is transfer things into a calendar year report for next year and go back the last several years that this report covers and do the data on a calendar year basis, so we have 3 years going back and from this point forward a calendar year, so it's consistent with. This is consistent with our reporting, but it's not with MPD's reporting.
Right, I had a question.
So I think
if we could switch to
calendar. Going forward, I think that's what we'd like to do, and it's job security for our research analysts anyway. give him something to do.
I think you asked for it when the NEAR Act was being pushed around, but it just got.
Yeah, when the NEAR Act was passed, they wanted this report by December 31st and wanted it. That was the intent, but I think we can make this adjustment and not really be in violation of the legislation. It'll be a cleaner way to do it as the more we get into it. So I just wanted to mention that too about it. And the last thing I wanted to mention on it is our intent then is to publish this on the Monday, this coming Monday. Yes, this coming Monday, if everyone is in agreement, if we have no further work to do on it, and make it available to the public and the council and the chiefs. Anybody have any comments on that?
Any questions on anything?
Did you, when you all looked at numbers, except when I read through it, it's just things like our numbers, like how many officers we have and how many civilians we have. Is that, were you all using a specific report that you don't want, like kind of the more current numbers?
We just generalized it because it keeps changing.
The one thing I will say is there are some, I think, some small things in here that we kind of don't get right when we say various special divisions, and then we say Harbor Patrol, Narcotics Unit, and Violent Crimes Unit. Those are units, not divisions.
Okay.
So divisions are like Special Operations Division, Narcotics and Special Investigations Division, Criminal Investigations Division. You're taking some of the units that are in the bigger divisions.
So they should, Narcotics Division? We can change that.
So I have things like that.
Violent Crimes Division?
Criminal Investigations Division.
We can go over some of these.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, we can make those changes before we
finish. I mean, things like that are one of the reasons we send them to the department with the hope that they help us out on it, but we, you know, we didn't receive that response this time, so.
Well, I'm gonna. On their behalf. I'm sitting here on this board, but you know, I just want to make sure we kind of get it.
Sure.
We can
change those.
So.
Yeah. I have the original final.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions that we can answer, resolve, help you sleep at night?
Okay, on page 6 where we said that UFRs may be substituted for two particular types of forms, RIFs are required for them. It's not substituted.
We can discuss if you want.
Maybe we can just discuss all this.
Yeah.
And we don't have to take up everybody else's
time. We can do that. Okay. I'll tell you what information we got, and then.
Okay. I mean, I saw the response, if that's what you're going
to do. No, through the 8 months of data collection and work and collaboration since April 1st. And some of it we just have to go with a generalized because we never really got. But we'll just.
Mm-hmm. And there's always room for improvement. Overall, I'm really, I mean, everyone on the board is. Overall, pretty happy with the report, and this is just the first report. You know, right. we'll do better even next time. I hope. I'm hopeful. So, it's our first stab at it. So.
I'm sorry.
Thanks, Kurt.
So, and
do you want to vote?
Yes, no. we're gonna all right. move it to a vote. I move to approve the report pending minor revisions with Rochelle and Commander King.
Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It is so approved.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That's a big step.
I know. Oh, I looked at it, and I said, it's definitely a lot of work. I get that.
You're back on the agenda.
It's always hard to do.
You're back on the agenda.
I understand. I completely get it, but
Matt, unfortunately, he's not here today, but.
Oh, wow, we're at the end.
Yeah, we're at the end now. That's great. Is there a motion to close the meeting?
To adjourn.
Close to me, it's the same thing.
I second it. Yes. We're there.
Is there a second? Yes.
Second
all
it.
Those in favor, aye.
Aye.
The meeting is adjourned at 6:59.
Wow. We're rolling.
He didn't get to them yet.
Okay, but so he knows
so
he has more.
Yeah.
I don't
and he may get him because he's going out of town.
I just want to make sure he knows.
He knows.
He's more than
that.
We didn't get very many.
That was real quick.
Let me stop right.